Welcome to the Super Gamer Podcast. Welcome to the new Super Gamer Podcast, episode 189. Our guest this week is a miniature maker and an artist and a cosplayer and a doll maker, but definitely going to be talking a lot about miniatures. This is a local person from where I am from. We have Gloria Jo here. Hello.
Hello.
So yes, miniatures. We connected here. We got this interview because we have a mutual friend. I have a friend who is kind of newly into miniatures. Her partner got her some sort of like miniature set for Christmas, and apparently, I think in her words, it changed her life. So like, what is the appeal of miniatures? I know you've been into, you've said like, ever since you were a kid, you were like making stuff for dollhouses and whatnot. What's the appeal?
I think it's just the whimsy of it. Like, everyone always has a different answer when you ask them why they get into miniatures. There's like the collecting, there's the people who make them. And it's just, I think for me, I have a very pivotal moment that I refer to whenever people usually ask me this. And it's specifically the Lord of the Rings extended edition Return of the King DVD in the appendices when they show the Lord of the Rings miniatures and like the like Minas Tirith and like all of the little displays that they made. When I saw that for the first time, and I was just like, wait, I can actually make these. I can actually learn how to do all of this. And I guess it just kind of spiraled from there.
So how long ago would that have been? I guess when the movie came out, right? When was that?
I don't remember when the movie came out. It would have been whenever I got the DVD, though.
Right.
I think I got it as a Christmas gift.
Well, you do.
And
have
I watched it twice.
You do have
in
really...
one day.
So. Oh wow, that's like 8 hours of viewing.
Yes, yes, it was the entire day.
You do have a really cool bag end, which yeah, I was going to bring up the fact that you've attributed when talking about bag end, you've said that Lord of the Rings was so influential in how you got into miniatures. I'm curious because bag end, the one you made, which is awesome, but it has like interior stuff, but you view it from the exterior. So like, what happens when you do? I know you've done this too with like houses you've made, like the murder house from American Horror Story. So I'm wondering, what happens if you like start making the exterior and you're like, I want to change something on the inside?
Oh, you can't. So, the thing about the collection of houses that I've done is that it's probably the most time-extensive projects that I've worked on. I did make, like, a YouTube video on how I made the murder house, but I don't really like talking about it in the same way that, like, most people who have a YouTube channel are kind of, like, cringe about it. They're like, I have a YouTube channel, but I don't want to talk about it. But I talked about how much planning is required because you can't just start making a house. Like, that won't work. You have to look up floor plans, look up the scale and like dimensions of everything. And most of the times, I want to say it could take like 2 weeks of just researching and planning before I even get started with anything. And then for a few of the houses, like Bag End, I wanted to challenge myself by making the interior as well. So some of them, you can kind of look into the mirror, not the mirror, sorry, into the windows, and just see like a little hint of what's going on inside. And yeah, you have to like be for sure that that's what you want. And everything's glued in there. So yeah, it's a lot of planning. But I think once you spent so much time on a piece like that, you have to start just like looking at the big picture, because like not everyone is going to look inside every single window. It's just a whole piece. When it's done, you get to enjoy it for however it is. And I know that I myself will take too long and just kind of overanalyze everything, and it has to be a point where I'm just like, no, I'm done. I don't want to do any more. I'm done. I'm happy.
Have you ever made any Easter egg that, like, you know is in there, but no one could see it?
No, actually. I've every single thing that I've had that kind of, like, was a little Easter egg, you can kind of see. Like, I've had people ask me for the murder house that I made if I put anything under the gazebo, because there's a little blood trail that kind of, like, flows out of it. It's very small, and people have asked me a little body underneath the gazebo, and I've always answered no, because you can't see it, and I didn't want to make it, so I didn't do it.
Well, speaking of, you mentioned all the research that goes in, and speaking of the gazebo, yeah, I did watch that video, and you tried to make a gazebo with no plan, and it didn't work. So then you made a plan, and you went back and made another one.
Yes, exactly. The first one that I did that's kind of ugly is just sitting in one of my planters right next to me, actually.
And to make this on the nerdy track that this show tends to follow, you actually used The Sims as a reference for your murder house. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, it was one of the planning processes that I had to go through. Because the murder house is based on a real house, I was able to find the floor plans for it. But because I was also kind of like attributing it to the show, the show didn't match the actual floor plans to the house. Like if you watch the show and then look at the floor plans, you're like, that doesn't make sense. So I was searching online, and I don't remember exactly how I stumbled into the Sims one, but I found one, and I was like, this is actually really perfect, because they show through the process of, like, I think the kitchen is the most changed one, because the kitchen is shown in the show a lot, American Horror Story, and the kitchen in the floor plans don't match at all. Like, it's a set that they have on the show. So I wanted to find something else that kind of showed how the house would work theoretically, because it you can't mash it together. And also because the real life house actually has a church that's attached to it. That's huge. But I didn't want to make the church, because it's just like a really big blocky part of the building. So I just took that out entirely. But yeah, the Sims video was very good. And I did link to it.
Let's talk about Miniature Enthusiasts of Winnipeg, Winnipeg being the city we are both in. And the acronym is MEOW, but it's, yes. it's the miniature enthusiasts. It's people who enjoy miniatures. You meet every month from September to June. It's been going on for 43 years. You've been a member since 2010. But my first question, and this definitely goes back to our mutual friend as well, do all miniature enthusiasts love cats?
Almost all of them.
Like the acronym, you know, MEOW. It sounds like this was always from the start. It was like, oh yes, cats and miniatures go together.
I like to think that it's fine for me specifically. I do have a cat. A lot of people talk about how... they can't get into miniatures because they have a cat or a dog. And I'm just like, just do it in another room. It's going to be fine. a lot of us do have cats.
Has your cat ever broken one of your miniatures?
No, that's actually why it's not a problem for me, because she's fairly well-behaved in that aspect. She's never really got her paws into anything. And the only two times that she ever broke something, it was because I put it in a bad place.
I, too, have a cat. And he's a bit bitey, but he doesn't tend to knock things over. He's the odd thing he has, but it's usually a because you're not paying attention to me kind of thing.
Yes, exactly.
I did want to ask before we get off the whole Lord of the Rings thing. So was there any overlap for you? Like, were you ever into, like, those kind of, like, Warhammer-style miniatures?
I got interested in them, only a tiny bit, but I've always geared towards more, I guess just making things from scratch in a sense. I do like the aspect of like painting them, And I do like the idea. I just recently kind of got into learning more about D&D. So I do like the idea of like making a map at some point. But I also understand that's very time consuming. So I don't know if I wanted to take it on just yet.
Right. Back to Meow. I understand you're now the make and take organizer. And if I understand that correctly, you basically, there's a theme every year, and then you kind of create these kits that people, okay, every meeting now, okay, we're going to use this kit, and here you can make something according to our theme. Maybe you can describe it better than I can.
Sure, yes, I can. I'm actually not the current coordinator. We have Patrice, and I'm going to butcher her last name, so I'm just not going to say it right now. She is the coordinator, and she will contact different members of the club and see if they have some sort of skill or technique that they want to teach. So I've taught a fair few of them. It's basically a small kit that you could either do in the meeting or you could take home. That's the whole thing. You could do it there or make or take. And I will be taking on the role in the next year, I think. We still haven't fully talked about it just yet. But you try to have a theme or something so that you have like a collection of tiny things that you've made from the year. I will have to mention that we had to kind of get back into the swing of things just because of COVID, we did have to stop in-person meetings for about a year, maybe a year and a half. So it did take a little bit of time to kind of get back into it. But now I think everyone's kind of more on board with just wanting to make things and wanting to be at the meetings again.
Who do you think would, like, maybe someone's not sure if they're into miniatures, maybe they think they've aged out of it or aren't old enough or whatever. I ask this because I know you went to art school, but when you went to art school, you didn't do anything with miniatures because you thought it was too childish. Do you look back at that now and you're like, oh, I was totally wrong, or...
Yes, I have a vague memory of being in one of my art classes, and I did something that was sort of leaning towards doing miniatures. And I did have a professor that actually steered me away from it because they were basically like, how much can you really do with this? Like, how much can you explore the concept? And I was just kind of like, okay, I mean, you're the professor. So I did actually graduate with a major in printmaking. And I haven't done any. As soon as I graduated, I was just like, I'm going to do miniatures. So I don't think that I'm unhappy with my choice. But I did learn a lot when I was in art school about a bunch of different mediums. So I'm not super unhappy with the fact that I didn't start earlier. I still feel as though that wouldn't have been an environment that would have allowed me to really grow with miniatures during that time anyways. So I did learn a lot of other things, but once I was able to just focus on miniatures and really kind of fall in love with it again, then yeah, I was just able to learn everything that I wanted to, and I wasn't confined to like a school setting or like a project setting in a sense. So I think I'm pretty happy anyways with the way that everything happened.
So a couple things to explore there. Certainly, as far as that professor saying, well, how far can you take this? Well, this is basically your full-time job now, is it not?
Yeah, correct, yes.
So you can take it pretty far.
I think they were just being cautionary, perhaps.
Right.
Which is fine. I totally get it. I don't fault them at all. He was actually one of my favorite professors, funnily enough. And he did say it very gently. So I think he was just wanting to make sure that I was able to get something out of art school. And I feel like I still did, so.
As far as it being a full-time job, like, how long does any I guess it depends on the piece, but how long do you tend to spend on things? And, you know, do you make mostly commissions, or is it stuff you just, oh, I want to make this and hopefully someone will buy it?
It's definitely, I was going to say half and half, but that's not really true. Maybe 25% is commission work, and then maybe 75 is just, I want to make this. Okay, I'm making it.
How long do you want to spend on a piece? Like I said, I mean, it must depend on what it is, right? Like a house is going to take longer than a pizza, maybe, I assume. But, you know, is there a point when you're like, okay, this is the most I can spend on this?
It's definitely something to consider, because miniature work, it can take a very long time to create a singular piece. So ever since I started working on miniatures full time, I have had to really schedule my time for each kind of collection of miniatures I want to work on. And then I also have like side projects that I want to work on, and also just other things so that I can stay sane.
Kind of along those lines, you mentioned how you didn't do it in school, but you got to kind of rediscover your love of miniatures. But what about, you know, because now it is more than a hobby, it's your job. Like, how do you deal with creative burnout, or do you experience that at all?
Oh, I definitely get that. Because it is a full-time job for me now, I've struggled a lot with creative burnout. I've actually tried to focus, I'm going to focus more on this year, just balancing my work schedule a lot better. And I don't know how relatable this is. I was really blessed in a sense to be put in a position where I was able to quit my previous job to do art full time. And ever since then, I've had to really schedule myself like a certain amount of hours every day to really work. But it's the same thing where if you're working like a quote normal 9-to-5 job, I'll still get really tired and burned out, and I won't be able to focus on anything really. So I've had to learn to actually take some time off, because when you're doing art, it doesn't really feel like a skill sometimes. Like, it is a skill and you can get better at it, but there's also all the small aspects of like taking photos of your art and then editing them and then putting them up, and all of those kind of tasks feel like small things that don't require a lot of effort, because it kind of just is part of the process. But you get tired. Like, you will edit photos for like 3 hours and then you're just like, I'm kind of tired, I want to do something else. And I understand that it comes from a very privileged place, because it's not like a very laborious job, but you still get tired. Like, you still need to take some time off to enjoy yourself. And like, I want to get back into gaming. I kind of stopped for a long time, but I want to try and get back into it.
Is there any particular game? Now we're really on the subject of this podcast.
Yeah.
Is there any particular game that is bringing you back that you really want to play?
So I have very strong opinions. One of the first games that I really remember playing a lot was The Sims 1, and I think that came out in 2001. And I just spent like 10 hours a day playing it. And then Sims 2 came out, and then same thing, I just got even more obsessed. I was making like whole cities where Sims 2 is the best, by the way. I don't care what anybody says. And I was making like shopping districts, I was making spas, restaurants. I would just build like an entire city on Sims 2. And then I had to go to university, so that stopped.
Would you be going back to The Sims, you know, if you found time to play games, or is there something new that you want to do?
Yeah, I usually would play Sims when I can, but yeah, because it feels like you take so much time to do it, I would really have to like allot myself, like, I'm going to play Sims for 6 hours and nobody talk to me. And I kind of play a variety of other kind of cozy games. But the one that I I've tried to finish, I still haven't finished it, is GTA 4.
Okay. That's a while back. Your cosplaying, you said you said last month you're hoping to do more cosplaying this year. I know you've done Ada Wong from Resident Evil 2, you've done Black Swan, others, I'm sure. Any plans this year, or do you know what your next one's going to be?
Sorry, I was just thinking. I definitely want to cosplay as Ada Wong again, because she is my hyperfixation at the moment. But I wanted to actually do a cosplay of Baby Doll from the movie Sucker Punch. And I know people have mixed feelings on that, but on that movie. But I think the outfit is really cute, so I want to cosplay that.
Speaking of fixations, two things you seem to really like. Miniature foods and Cody Fern.
So that's funny, because Cody Fern was definitely a hyperfixation for a while, but it like really kind of died down after he stopped doing jobs. So he wasn't really doing anything. So I was just like, I gotta find something else that has content.
What about the food? Like, you know, obviously we've talked about, you know, you do houses, dolls, all sorts of stuff as far as miniatures. But like, what is it about food that you like so much? And your food is awesome. Like, it's super detailed. The pizzas, the sushi, the charcuterie, you know, super cool. But what is it about the foods that you really like?
Thank you. They're just really fun to make. It's also trying to figure out what you can use to really make something look like the food. Lots of techniques to discover, and it's just being able to put all these ideas and pieces into a tiny little thing and then just have it in your hands and just be like, this is really cute, look at all the little things in there.
Do your nails get in the way at all? I've seen in a lot of videos you have like pretty long nails. Like, is that tough to work with?
No, I've had long nails my entire life, so I've kind of just worked around it. The funny thing is that when I was younger, I did guitar for grade school or whatever, and my guitar teacher would constantly just be like, trim your nails, cut your nails. I don't want to.
Well, there are definitely, I mean, in a sense, there were times like watching the windows you were making for the murder house. I was like, well, maybe they're actually good, because you can kind of like really grasp them in them.
Yeah, I actually don't use, maybe I do without thinking about it, but I definitely started using like tweezers and toothpicks and needle tools a lot more. But I think you just kind of get a feel for how your hands move. And yeah, they don't ever really feel like they're in the way for me.
Are you always on the lookout for materials? Like, are you just, any time you're anywhere in life, you're just like, oh, you know, I could use that as a tree, or I could use that as grass, or whatever?
One of my friends, Eric, they were collecting a lot of these, like, what are they called? Like, the cup takeout containers, because they would order, like, drinks a lot, like the coffee containers.
Okay.
And I was wanting a bunch of them because I found out that they're actually pretty good for making recycled paper, and there was a year where I was just like, I really want to make recycled paper. So I was collecting them for my friend, and mom was just like, I have some stuff around the house. Like, what kind of garbage does she want? Does she want this garbage? And my friend described it to me, and I was just like, no, no, that's just, like, I want specific garbage.
So we can't just take, like, a bag of garbage and give it to you?
No, I don't want just a bag of garbage. It's specific garbage.
ICON, which I should explain anyway, is a Winnipeg anime convention. Okay. I imagine you must be a huge hit there because of your Inuyasha and Kiki's Delivery Service miniatures.
So those two specifically, I actually haven't shown at ICON because I made them after, I think. Finished them during, so I didn't have them ready, basically. But I definitely have anime, what's it called? I definitely have a lot of miniatures that are very much inspired by anime. The most recent ones that I really focused on was like these little calcifer frying pan and earrings, which were those were a big hit last year when I was at Icon, and I made more this year. I actually made them because they were originally a commission, because someone messaged me and they were going to a Ghibli themed wedding and they wanted me to make the frying pan with the little calcifer flame on the bottom. And their hair was also red, so they wanted to have it as a hair clip. And I thought it was the cutest thing ever. I asked them for photos if they were comfortable with them.
Have you tried, this is a Winnipeg thing for anyone listening outside of Winnipeg, but have you tried Genie's Cake yet? You made miniature versions of Genie's Cake in 2020, and I believe you had not eaten it at that point.
Yes, it was a big deal that I haven't eaten. It was because I was selling them. That was also a custom. It was a commission work. Someone asked me to make the miniature Genie's, I think it was actually 2019. And then I posted the photo of them in 2020, and it just kind of spiraled. People were just like, oh my God, you're making this. I need this. I need this. So I was just making a bunch of them. And then I started selling them at like various other shows that I was doing. And people would come up to me and be like, oh my God, is that a little Genie's Cake? I'd be like, yes, it is. And then they would also always ask me, did you ever try it? Because they always wanted my opinion on what it tasted like. And I always had to say, I never had it. And then I get, because I've never had it at the time, I got the most varied opinions about it. And they were very strong opinions. I'm sorry to the people who make the cakes. But it was just very, very strong opinions. And I think last year I was at a party and I did try it. And I thought it was okay.
Yes, I think that is an accurate... there are very strong opinions about it. And I think the real answer is it's fine.
Yes, there is a correct answer. and it's that one.
Well, I'll let you get going right away, but I did. I do want to bring up coming right up for Miniature Enthusiasts of Winnipeg. You've got Jen Arnold from Best in Miniature, a CBC TV show about miniatures, coming as a guest. Are you excited about that?
I think it's going to be really interesting because, yeah, a lot of people are really interested just to hear what the experience was like. And I have to be honest, I'm personally not a huge like reality TV watcher, so I've seen clips of it. Because this is the third year running, I think, and I've never been able to actually set the time aside to watch it. But I have seen clips. I have seen different miniatures that have come out of it, and I do follow a few people who were also in the show. But I think it's gonna be really interesting.
Despite your not really being into reality shows, if the opportunity came up, would you be on that show?
Personally, no. I'm not a huge, like, need to be on TV type thing. I have a lot of, like, social anxiety. And for me personally, like, being in that type of setting would be, like, the worst thing for me. I'm very much, like, I'm very much it can work well in groups, but I would prefer not to.
Cool. Well, yeah, let's before we plug you specifically, let's plug Meow. You know, who's allowed, if I'm totally new to it, I've never been to a meeting, do I need to like contact anyone? Where do I go? How do I get involved?
Yes. So if you actually want to come to one of our meetings, you're allowed to come to two meetings for free. The times and the dates and the location is always posted on the website, and you can come for two meetings, and usually it is a little bit of like housekeeping if there's anything like new that's happening. We do have a library that's free to use for members, and and then we usually have like a make and take, and then we're usually free to chat or do the make and take. But yeah, after the two meetings, there is a membership fee. I don't remember off the top of my head what it is, but the fees just goes back into helping to rent the locations of where we have our meetings, because we are a nonprofit. So we don't make any money. It just is so that we can actually have the meetings. And yeah, we are always looking for more people to come. Any age is fine. I think if you're under like 13, though, I think you do need to have a parent with you. Yeah, we have a pretty wide range of ages in the group. And we are definitely trying to get younger people to come as well.
Cool. And then for you, you're on Etsy, Gloria Jo Art. You're also on Redbubble, Lonely Cloud Art. Anywhere else people should find you?
The most frequent places I will be is probably on my Instagram. I have, lonely.cloud? Sorry. Yes. Lonely.cloud is my main Instagram account. And then Gloria Jo Art is my secondary Instagram account that is mostly like strictly just for miniatures.
Gloria Jo, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.